Welcome to StockBullies.com. My name is Hurry, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about whether we're going to be having a stock market crash or correction. This is a question I get asked a lot, and especially right now, where you're seeing the market really pull back. Not too significant, in my opinion. I think we're due for more correction, but I think. Crash, I don't know about that, but correction, yeah, slightly, but I'll share my opinion on this. I get asked this a lot. A lot of people are nervous right now, and they just really are unsure, and that's okay, because this may be your first time getting into the market, and you really don't understand this type of behavior and how to act. So for myself, I've always been a long-term holder, so corrections or even a crash, it's okay if you just hold. And if you look over time, it's been really difficult to time it. I don't think if everybody could time it, you know, you would have any losers, and that's impossible. So we could be in a crash right now, and you really wouldn't know it. And so if you look at the charts before during COVID, the early in February, the market was slowly, you know, people thought it was a correction. It was nosediving when you look back now, but if you were there, it was moving sideways for weeks, where you really didn't know which way we were getting pulled. We were going to go down or we were going to go up. So anyhow, I'll break it down. I mean, you know, when I do these videos, I make sure that they're easy to understand. And so if I break down this question, I break it down to maybe like about five questions five different sections to answer this question. So will there be a stock market crash or correction? I think it's possible. And I think that will happen if the things that have been happening stop. And I think a lot of that could be the excess money that goes into the market. So market moves up, especially those last 12 months, is because, you know, a lot of it has to do with the federal government injecting money into the economy. Interest rates so low. So if you wanted to borrow, there's a ton of cash out there that, you know, you can raise capital easier. You can, everything has just been really positive for the market, especially with the lockdown. And, you know, you didn't have your casinos, your sports betting at some times of the year. And you didn't really have to spend much because you couldn't really do much. So you had this abundance of money that, you know, you invested. And, you know, prior to COVID, stock market wasn't really that popular. You know, stock market wasn't formed in 2020. It's always been around, but it really did become popular. It almost seemed like it was like a stay at home type of thing to do. And which is good. I mean, it brought on, I think through social media and through news and media and regular media, it's brought in a lot of attention to the market. And so people have made quite a bit. And for that reason, it's caught in a lot of attention. And then with that attention, it's brought in a lot of money. So it's injected quite a bit of money through that. And then also, you've heard a lot of success stories with, you know, people taking their stimulus check and investing it in some kind of asset, digital assets, whether it be stocks or crypto, and making a ton. And so I think that in itself did help the market over the last 12 months. Other than that, besides the Fed, People have nothing else to do. I'll show some charts of things that, you know, I think also help. But will there be a, I mean, the answer to that question, I think, is yeah, it could, or maybe it doesn't. And there's going to be certain things that I think that can alter what we've seen in the last 12 months. So I've mentioned the Fed, and then I've mentioned those new investors that have entered the market and added a stimulus in itself into the stocks. I also think the interest rates being low, a lot of margin borrowing has helped the market. I think the importance of investing has really taken off through social media, and then also through COVID, and people realizing how poor they were. And so I think that really did amplify that message of like, hey, I got to invest to protect myself and my future. And so I think that really resonated with a lot of people during this pandemic. To answer that question, you kind of have to look back at history. Has this happened before? Yeah. And for some of us, we, depending on our age, we might have witnessed the last three. Right. So the .com was a big one in 2000, where really all the tech sector really just took off. The valuations on them were just ridiculous, and they got a bit crazy. There's a story, actually, that's pretty funny. There's a company called I don't know if they were just called Mortgages or whatever, and they wanted to go into the stock market, and they wanted to be publicly traded. And the valuation they got from the investment bankers were, I think, about like $500 million or something like that. And what's funny about this story is the investment banker advised the CEO at that time, said, hey, just change your name to mortgages.com. And he said, why? And he said, you're automatically going to get a higher valuation just because you got a website and you're in the tech space. And surely enough, they did. And they were valued $300 million more. So it was a wild time. And we kind of seen that with cannabis, with the EV sector, where really anything that was electric, car, battery, raw materials, it just really took off. And the same could be said with cannabis, and Bitcoin. Anybody that was trading, any company that adopted Bitcoin, we've seen that with Tesla, Square, PayPal, and you know, their valuations just increased immediately just because they had diversified they've added crypto to their, especially Bitcoin, to their balance sheet. So another question I had that people have asked me is like, you know, why and what happens during a crash? And crashes, corrections usually happen when the market has peaked, or there's no more money coming in, sudden switches, fear, or no reason to grow, where you've kind of tapped out. So markets have peaked where people pretty much maxed out. There's no more money coming in. That could happen. So I always say, you know, when you look at Bitcoin or these crypto, if it didn't exist, if crypto and the crypto industry didn't exist, if Bitcoin didn't exist and all those other altcoins didn't exist, that money that's in there would have been where? It would have been in the market. So I think when other things, so when the reopening of the economy does happen, we could have a situation where people that were pouring money into the market are now reallocating that spend and putting it towards travel, right? Or whatever, like pulling their money out and traveling with it or partying with it or whatever the case may be, investing in it, buying a house because they couldn't do it or getting married or whatever. So we may see money coming out of the market or no more new money coming into the market because there's these new behaviors that are being picked up by the global community or the investment community. And people may say, oh, you know what? Why would investors love the market? Yeah. What if their clients are changing their behavior, right? And they're diversifying into, I don't know, real estate, whatever the case may be. They may move their money. Things may change. Things are going to change when the reopening officially happens. And I'll show you why I think that. And I think also switches. So we're kind of going through a weird switch where you're going from COVID stocks to reopening stocks. So with that switch, you got selling of, your Zooms. But then it's weird because the COVID stocks may be permanent stocks with the exception of the pharmaceuticals. But then again, you look at the pharmaceutical industry, is COVID done? No, this is just a therapeutical vaccine that they're giving us. They haven't solved anything. This is a temporary relief, right? To protect you. It doesn't stop you from giving COVID to somebody else. It may not prevent you from getting a variant that we have yet to see. So we're in a unique situation because you still see value in the COVID stocks, right? Because work from home seems to be a permanent thing for some industries like the tech sector. And so you can't really pull out money when you see revenues that Zoom continues to beat estimates or Netflix or I still believe that habits, I think even though some of us have been locked in for a year, we've gained these new habits. And humans are pretty interesting. When they gain these habits, it takes time for them to adjust these habits. So if you've gotten used to ordering your food from Uber Eats or DoorDash or whatever, you're just not going to just switch and start eating out again. It may take time. Like there's going to be a cautionary period where people have psychologically been damaged. And so I think sudden switches can cause crashes, can cause corrections. I think we may not see that. Like, yes, we went from, EV like crazy, but we're starting to see EV cool off. It doesn't mean, we're going back to oil, reinvesting back into oil and stuff. But I think generally, I'm saying that sudden switches could cause a correction. And we didn't see that, thank God. I think there was enough money where we are able to spread it out. And so can the cruise stocks make come back and the airlines and da-da-da? This is a good switch. The sudden bad switch that I fear is, could COVID come back with a variant that we can't fix, that we can't tackle? And is that possible? Yeah. I mean, I'm no expert, but if you look at, it took them 6 months to develop this vaccine or therapeutic, temporary vaccine. If another variant comes out that may be stronger and more powerful, will it take them 6 months? Are we going to always have a 6 month lead time? So that could cause panic where people start dumping airline stocks and travel, hotel, restaurant stocks and, theme park stocks, dump it and then switch back to COVID stocks, stay at home stocks. right? That sudden switch, you're gonna have a lot of people hurt in the market. And when people get hurt in the market, there's consequences to the overall market. And that could mean they, you know, quit, they retire from trading. We don't talk about that as much, but there's data out there. I haven't come across it, but there's that. There's fear as another one. I think any kind of fear now could cause a panic and a crash. So it may not be COVID related. It may be evictions. People may see, you know, closures of businesses, permanent, like nonstop bankruptcies, and, any kind of activity, right? So, you know, what happens during a crash? Usually it's fear, sudden switches, no more money coming in, and we start seeing, you know, selling pressure. And the fear could be, hey, I'm selling, I'm dropping all my airline stocks and hotel stocks, so I'm liquidating. Sudden switches. I believe in oil, and I see everyone moving to EV. My position keeps losing. I take a loss and I want to go over to EV. Then I realize EV is losing. And then, like, you know, and that, you know, chasing sometimes, if too many people do it, it could cause problems. And that can happen with a lot of inexperienced traders that are in the market. And we've seen how powerful this younger social-based investors are. And we've seen that with GameStop, and we've seen that with a bunch of other bankrupt JCPenney, Blockbuster, companies that really don't have the financial evidence to give, you know, billion-dollar valuations. In the case of GameStop, it was valued at one point at $25 billion when they ran it up to $400 a share, $484. And so these sudden switches, I've seen that, where people dumped good stocks so that they can go play in the casino stocks. I call them the casino stocks because they had no reason to be at where they were. And I seen a lot of different opportunities open up. And so sudden switches like that could cause problems. And they said that that GameStop situation almost caused a huge collapse in the markets. So we can see that, as a possibility, but, you know, how do we fix it? Right. And people think that the Fed will come in and fix things. I don't know. I'll give you my opinion. Feds don't always fix the things. If you want to take a look at the dot-com crash. And if you want to look at the 2008-2009 crash, the only reason why the Fed stepped in there, if you look, they only stepped in into the financial, right? They wanted to back the banks. They didn't care about anybody else that went down. They didn't care about anybody else. The Ford, the bailout of the auto industry, I mean, that was more a labor situation, right? They didn't want huge unemployment in the auto sector because it plays such a big role in the United States and in Canada. So they were forced to bail them out. But it was really just the financial infrastructure, right? But they didn't care about the tech sector at that time. They weren't handing out bailouts to Microsoft or Google. They only did it to the financial sector because they know the domino effect, and if our banking sector fails, then that's it. There's nothing else left to save at that point, right? So they had no choice there. Dot-com crash, they didn't care. This last one, it was, you know, I admire the Fed for taking the action that they did. And I think there was a lot of pressure from the Trump administration because they really seem to have an obsession with the stock market over Main Street and what was happening in the real economy. But yeah, I don't know. I think they're on the hook now if the market was to crash because the Federal Reserve's balance sheet has increased. And that is not something that I'm making up. You know, we see the rise. If you look at the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve prior to the financial collapse, it wasn't ridiculous, but you did see a huge jump, right? In 2008, but the big leg up here in 2020 was huge. They have increased their balance sheet significantly. They have a lot more to lose, in my opinion, and I don't see how they would allow the economy to crash and crumble. So they're kind of on the hook, but they will pick and choose. So I don't want you to think they're going to save every stock ticker out there. They'll save as much as they can afford and the ones they see worthy. I think the first round of COVID relief was a sympathy play. Any business got a loan. Everybody got stimulus. In Canada with CERB, every business qualified for the most part that filed taxes, small business loans with interest free. But I think this time around, they're going to let people fail. They're going to keep the one, they're going to help the one, they're going to pick and choose who they help survive this time. And it's not going to be the same as what we've seen last year. It just would be too expensive to repeat what they have done. So people ask me what could cause the next crash. In my opinion, I think margin debt. If we look at the amount of margin debt that's out there, it's almost at $800 billion. And let me start closing some of these things I've. Okay, so why is this important? When you look at the S&P and the margin debt, the S&P 500, you'll notice that the margin debt pretty much has been entangled with the S&P 500. So if the margin debt was to probably, if it was to decrease, the S&P 500 decreases, is that what's happening here? I don't know. Possible, but maybe not, who knows. But I do believe that there is a concern here that there's a lot of debt. There's a lot of margin debt out there. We've reached levels we've never seen before. And I think there's going to be consequences. If a lot of these stocks are valued at what they are because there's, you know, an enormous amount of margin debt that's out there. What happens if, you know, rates increase or we run into liquidity issues and the Fed changes rules on margins? Anything that affects margins, I believe, will affect the stock prices. And for those of you who don't understand what margin trading is when you borrow money from your brokerage to buy stocks. So I'll give you an example. If you put $1,000 into a margin trading account, let's say, if you put $1,000 in to Quest Trade here in Canada, or whatever, like Robinhood or Webull, they may give you, depending on a number of things, your how much assets you have in with them as a, with their brokerage, your credit rating, and the amount of cash that you just that you have there in your margin trading account. And there's some kind of calculation formula that they use based on those factors. They may front you $3,000 for they may front you 75%. Like, they may give you $3,000 for your $1,000 cash deposit in a margin trading account, right? Or whatever. Everything's different for everybody. Every brokerage is different. Their formulas are different. But it's basically, let's say you put $1,000 down, they give you $3,000. Your purchasing power now is $4,000. You're borrowing $3,000 from them. Now, what does that mean? You can buy more stock. With you only have $1,000 of your real cash, and they're fronting you an extra $3,000. Now you've quadrupled your purchasing ability. So what does that mean? You're going to be able to buy more stock. Maybe even be able to pay more for a stock than you would have. So what does that do? It inflates the market. Stocks are going to be higher because there's all sorts of cheap money around that's allowing people to trade. So margin debt to me is important. And if you look at another chart here, I don't know if it's pulling up. It's the S&P 1500 in margin debt. And it's interesting. It's somewhat entangled as well. And I think we should look at margin debt. It's going to indicate what could happen. And if you look in 2020, when margin debt in red went down, the market went down. But I mean, that's a hard, that's very difficult to say, because that was around the COVID period. But I think there's a relationship there. It's not that clear to identify this as an issue. But I think there's an issue when we've reached a new high at $800 billion of margin debt, and to me it's scary. But hey, I guess that's how it works. But we'll see. That's something that I keep a look. I keep an eye on. And then the Federal Reserve and their behaviors. That's something also I look at. Their money, let's close some of these things. When we look at the money supply in the United States, it's really just been, going one way, and that's, the issuance of more money, increasing the money supply is something that they don't care, and they've been doing for a long time. I would look at the Fed. Does their balance sheet continue to increase? And if it starts shrinking and they stop doing the things that they've been doing, then I would be concerned, and I would think that there could be a crash due to that. So margin, I said what could cause the next crash? It could be the margin debt crisis, where interest rates increase, the amount of margin that's being borrowed decreases, which would pull money out of the market and would cause people to sell, and then that would definitely hurt the stock market overall. And the Fed selling assets, if their balance sheet starts to decrease, if they stop producing more debt and issuing more money, that could be huge, and could cause a crash, in my opinion. But I don't believe that they have any intentions of not doing that. So we can take a look at
know that reference.
A video here where Jerome Powell, I don't know if you guys can see that, but Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chairman, kind of speaks to that. So I'll just play this part here.
I think the deficits matter.
Certainly in the long run, I do believe they do.
You don't think they matter in the short run?
Again, I think we will need to return to
this. I can call on Haggerty because he's waited so long.
This, we'll need to return to this issue, but I wouldn't return to it now. And the way to get after this issue is to get a situation where the economy is growing faster in nominal terms than the debt is.
What if that becomes the case, but your spending's also growing faster than your economy?
Well, no, that is the deficit. I mean, you know, the question really is that the deficit is the difference between intake and spending. So it depends. It's the net of those two.
Let me stop you, Mr. Chairman, because I'm going to have one last question quickly. M2, the money supply, is up, I think, about $4 trillion over the past year. Or $6 trillion, what's a few trillion? It's up 26%, the highest amount since 1943. What does that tell you?
Well, when you and I studied economics a million years ago, M2 and monetary aggregates generally seem to have a relationship to economic growth. Right now, I would say the growth of M2, which is quite substantial, doesn't really have important implications for the economic outlook. M2 was removed some years ago from the standard list of leading indicators. And that classic relationship between monetary aggregates and economic growth and the size of the economy, it just no longer holds. We've had big growth of monetary aggregates at various times without inflation. So something we have to unlearn, I guess.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, so I don't, and this is only a week ago, I don't think he cares and is not scared to continue to print money and liquid, like keep injecting money into this economy. So if that changes, if that attitude changes, and so you could pay attention to, you know, he has these meetings constantly. He's asked to testify here before Congress, and he does have meetings constantly, whether it be with other central banks. You know, he was the Congress here. He has the Federal Reserve meetings as well that he does, and all of this is on YouTube, and you can watch him live. And if you can judge his attitude changing, or the sentiments changing, then you know you can add a check in that box and say, hey, this is one of my indicators of a market crash. And so I wouldn't bet against the Fed. I mean, like, you think your pockets are deep? The Fed is the pocket. Like, they have an unlimited amount of money, right? They could just buy everything if they wanted to. And I think I don't see them wanting this economy to crash. I don't see them allowing the stock market to crash, because they're invested with us in this situation. So Main Street, so unemployment, poor earnings, foreclosures, virus resurgence, I think these are things that I would look for. If the variants get worse and they get stronger, and the current vaccines that are out there don't work, I would expect a crash of just fear and people pulling their money out and those behaviors. Foreclosures are something that could happen, evictions, and you know, that could stem, you know, a domino effect, especially into the banking sector, and could cause a liquidity issue, and similar to what we've seen in 2008. We have new measures to combat that, but if it's overwhelming, anything can be broken. So is that a possibility? I don't think so. Personally, I don't think so. I think our governments have shown us, with the extensions of these eviction, really, they've fought it off, right? We've seen both governments in Canada and the United States allow mortgages to be delayed for 6 months, credit cards, car loans. They were assisting landlords so that people don't get evicted, rent relief, you name it. Off all these programs, I don't see them ending them anytime soon. They continue to extend them. Poor earnings, you know, that is something to obviously look at if, you know, earnings start to get missed. And we start realizing that companies are overvalued, and we start seeing a trend line of where more companies are missing their earnings. I think that will, that could cause not a crash, but a correction, I'd say. People just having to reevaluate their investments. And if we see a trend, that, you know, could cause a bigger correction. Unemployment, you know, 10% unemployment right now. There's probably higher than that. There's been so many people that are going to go back to school and get retrained. They're not going to be a part of that number. The market is doing really well with unemployment. It didn't seem to care about unemployment. But it is something, obviously, that has consequences. And if we look at the unemployment rate, it peaked in 2009 at 10%, and then it steadily, you know, went down in the United States. So the crash happened in October of 2008, which would be right here. Then it takes time for, you know, businesses to adjust, numbers to be tabulated. And in October 2009, we would reach the highest, and then it went downhill after that. So if we look at the market did really well, even though, I mean, obviously the trend line was, you know, going down in terms of unemployment, but it's not like the market was doing horrible in during this whole period, right? Even at like 8%, if you look at the markets in, you know, 2011, 2012, they weren't horrible. So I guess I'm saying this is that, yes, unemployment numbers could scare us and cause fear and panic for a correction, but a crash, I don't see that based on historical scenarios like what I'm presenting you, where unemployment rates were still, you know, above 5%, and we still see okay numbers in the markets. The reopening, I think, is going to tell us a lot about the next, how the next bull run will take shape. I think if people start coming out of the market people start, you know, shifting their investing habits because they've been locked in and blah, 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 and now taking profits out to do other things, opening up real businesses because we're reopening now. So if you're somebody that's made quite a bit of money during the lockdown on the stocks, you may take your money out and you may invest it into, you know, whatever business that you've always wanted to start. Now you're able to. So if we see an exodus of capital coming out of the market, it is a possibility that could cause a correction or potential crash if we see too much of it. So what has to happen first is a question I ask myself. And I think we have to look at certain things. There was an article that came out last summer, I remember, and it said that there's $5 trillion, you know, parked in money markets as investors are still afraid of stocks. Warren Buffett, Apple, a lot of these companies, these got a lot of, they have a boatload of cash sitting, Warren Buffett especially. And I think they're waiting, right? And I think a crash, for it to happen, even retail investors, there's a lot of people that prior to COVID were waiting for a crash to happen. And so I think there's that money. I know that this $5 trillion has gone down in September. I was trying to look for a chart to share with you guys, but it's gone down from 5 down to 3.5 in September. And I think around 2 in December. And there's still a lot of money that has not been put into the market. So I think that has to jump in first. And then I think the Fed has to stop buying, whether it be bonds or any kind of assets and any kind of anything to increase their balance sheet. They got to stop that. I think that has to happen first. I think all the stimulus programs and incentives, Biden had a, I'm trying to find it, home buyers and builders. Biden's proposing a $15,000 first time home buyers tax credit. So this is maybe not as instant, but incentives like this and others, whether it be like wage subsidy programs, all this stuff has to end first, in my opinion, before we see a crash. Because these band-aids have been working really well, and I think they're going to continue to add more. And it's not me that decides that, obviously. There are individuals like, we could take a look here, with Janet Yellen. She's the Treasury, U.S. Treasury. And what she talks about here is basically how COVID has impacted the economy, in that she believes in stimulus and keep helping until, I think she says 2024, but I'll let it play and you can just get an idea of how far they're willing to go.
This projection recently showed it would take until 2024 in their baseline case to get back to full employment without a package like this. So we think it's very important to have a big package, addresses the pain this has caused, 15 million Americans behind on their rent, 24 million adults and 12 million children who don't have enough to eat, small businesses failing. I think the price of doing too little is much higher than the price of doing something big. We think that the benefits will far outweigh the costs in the longer run.
Even if it does cause sustained higher inflation, possible overheating of the economy, we're seeing expectations rise, commodity markets are really heating up.
Well, inflation has been very low for over a decade, and
yeah. So you know, the U.S. Treasury and a Democrat office, both, you know, White House, Congress, and the Senate, along with Janet Yellen, that loves money, printing money. And then you got a Jerome Powell doesn't have an issue with it. I think this whole team together is willing to, one, get Biden reelected, or, you know, get the Democrats reelected. And so they want to really do this, and they want to really do it well. And I think they're going to continue to do whatever they have to. Inflation, I don't know how, I don't know what, I mean, I don't know what she's talking about when she says there's been low inflation, but everybody has their different calculations of inflation. But I do think there will be inflation. We're seeing that already in the markets. Stock prices are higher than what they were pre-COVID. House prices are higher than what they were pre-COVID. Food prices are higher. Everything's going to be higher, right? And then you've got programs like increasing the wages, the minimum wage, and increasing minimum wage, incentives like the $15,000 first-time home buyer credit. Well, that's going to drive, it's going to create artificial buyers that weren't, able to buy, are now able to buy a home with that assistance. There's these shared equity mortgages that they have in Canada where the government invests into real estate with you. You put 5%, he'll put in another 5% or 10 and 10. And he's an investor with you. So when you win, that he wins, and so on. So when you sell it and you split the profit with the government, like, there's a lot of programs that are out there. And I think these things have to stop before you see a crash. I don't see them allowing a crash to happen. And they're going to put all their guns out to prevent it. So I think another video I wanted to share was I think this is it here. Biden talking about the extension.
As people have nowhere to go and can't socially distance, next week we'll take action to extend nationwide restrictions on evictions and foreclosures. This will provide more than 25 million Americans greater stability instead of living on the edge every single month. And I'm asking Congress to do its part by funding rental assistance for 14 million hard-hit families and tenants. It will also be a bridged economic recovery for countless mom-and-pop landlords.
Yeah, so he's trying to help the landlords, the tenants, pretty much everybody. Like, they're not willing to allow this to collapse. This stuff has to stop before you see a collapse. So I got a lot of people that say, you know, a collapse in the market's going to happen, but, you know, they keep delaying it, and they're doing it through things like this. The other thing that needs to die, I think, is the fear of missing out. People were scared to invest in 2020, but heard the returns that people got and were upset with themselves in a lot of cases that they didn't get an opportunity. So you have that crowd that is having that fear of missing out. And then you have another crowd, in my opinion, that seen what happened in 2008 with that crash and probably are like, you know what? I'm not going to let them, you know, screw me out of my shares like they did then. And because if you look at where that last bottom in 2009, March of 2009, if you just held on, you've done really well for the most part. So and definitely during real estate, right? People gave up their real estate at that time, foreclosed, and now they look back and they say, hey, I shouldn't have done that. So I think people have learned from that last one. So, and then people have learned from the 2020 stock market crash. And that's why whenever we have these pullbacks, I notice there's just aggressive buying. There is no fear in pullbacks. And if you scan through social media and the attitudes of a lot of these traders, they ain't scared of nothing. So you got to kill that, in my opinion. There's a lot of people that don't want to miss the boat. And I think, you know, with what Biden's saying, with evictions, they're just going to be postponed. We're going to take care of not only the tenant, we're going to take care of the mom and pop landlords. We're going to take care of everybody. Pretty much that's what they're saying. We're going to take care of everybody, and we don't care how much it's going to cost us, because we got the ability to print as much money as we want, and nobody's going to stop us, because we have Democrats in the Congress, Senate, White House, of course, and the Treasury, right? Janet Yellen loves printing money, and Jerome Powell, he said there's no problem with debt. He said in the short term, no. He said in the long term is an issue. So these guys and girls don't seem to care. What else can I share here? And then interest rates are something that have been bond, like the 10-year T-bills have been creeping up. But I mean, he's going to pull something out of his sleeve, and he's going to correct all of this, in my opinion. He's just not going to lose this war. And this is what, not too long ago, a month ago, and he talks about interest rates.
We have not seen the big uptick in defaults that we thought we might see in non-financial corporates. We really haven't seen it. So it's just not something we are feeling or have ever felt, really. When the time comes to raise interest rates, we'll certainly do that. And that time, by the way, is no time soon. You ask about macro poop.
Yeah, so he said interest rates are not going to go up anytime soon. So he's straight up. And they can't afford that to happen. Could you imagine? You've leveraged everybody. You've told everybody to take loans because of COVID. You told all these businesses to, you know, take on all this excess cash and reopen your businesses and blah 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 blah. Invest, keep investing. You've indicated all this, and then you want to jack up the interest rate. You're just not going to be able to do that. You just can't. You increase the interest rates, what will that do to homeowners? People that have borrowed to buy cars, people that have borrowed to start up businesses, to restart their businesses, to retrofit their businesses so that they can be COVID ready. Like, what would happen to all these people? And so that's why I don't believe it at all. The interest rates, yeah, sure, the 10-year bonds have gone up a bit, but he will fix it. If he doesn't, you'd want to monitor that, and that could cause a crash too. I think we would have to also, the economy right now is changing. So we're going to a 2.0, right? They keep saying the Great Reset. I think the new economy, the switch to the new economy has to die. So I don't think we've fully seen the switch to green. So yeah, we've seen some EV stocks pop and so on, but we haven't really seen this complete switch to going green. So there's some room there to grow in the markets. I think the switch to cloud is still far from finished. Blockchain, switching to cashless. We haven't had that. And there's a lot of different things I haven't mentioned, but I still think the new economy, there's a lot of catalysts for us to invest and move up. So until that story dies, I don't see a crash happening. People, you're constantly hearing, you know, we just heard the United States Postal Service going all electric with their mail trucks. It's only a matter of time before we start hearing other companies, Walmart and so on and so. And the story for going green is just starting, in my opinion, right? Even with cannabis, genomics, so many different things are changing right now. Cashless societies, you're going to have more room for growth in stocks. This story has to end, and I don't think it ends. Like what we've seen in March, that might have been the correction we needed. Who knows? Right? So what are things to monitor? I'd say the inflows and outflows of money, whether it be the Fed or individual investors, margin levels, interest rates, maybe look at even the taxes. If tax laws start changing that will not favor the rich, that's going to affect the markets. That may affect investors. Elizabeth Warren, she has some new tax recommendations and things that she wants to pass, and those things are going to affect the market, and that could cause a crash. Consumer behavior with the reopening, how do they behave? Can they readopt their old habits? Is traveling going to be a domestic thing? That's what I think. I don't think it's going to be an international thing. You're not going to have the whole world vaccinated. And the variants are constantly sprouting up right now, whether it be in Latin America, Africa, all continents, right? We've now established the California variant, the New York variant. So I don't think it stops. So I think domestic traveling will be there, but international traveling, I don't think it goes back to the same level. I think a lot of us are going to realize that we may have nothing to go back to. Give you some examples here. Best Buy, this is 2 days, was it 25th? So maybe last week, they cut 5,000 jobs. 750 of those jobs are in Canada. And basically, think about this. They've had their best quarter. They realize that the curbside and online is amazingly working for us. Why would we need employees, right? And Disney came out today or yesterday and said they're going to close 60 stores in the US and Canada as shopping shifts to online. This is going to continue to happen. You're going to see more headlines like this. We've adopted new habits. We're not eating at restaurants. So we may have ghost kitchens where the kitchen exists, but it's just only through Uber Eats. You won't be able to access the food, right? And then once we get through Uber Eats, the next wave will be a drone will bring you the food. Like, there's going to be these shifts. So consumers, are they going to go back to restaurants? Are they going to go back to traveling? Are they going to go back to live entertainment? I think we say we want to, but I think we've also adopted these new habits that we weren't comfortable with in the past. We never thought of grocery delivery, but now we're okay with it, right? Being cashless, we never thought of it. Now we're scared of cash so we don't get the COVID and so on and the virus. So consumer behavior with the reopening, something to watch. I think real inflation, not the inflation that they tell us, but real inflation. If you realize things are moving up too fast, food prices are increasing too fast, and pay attention to it in your shopping habits. And real unemployment, when you start seeing friends and family members having a hard time finding jobs, or just pull up a job search, like an Indeed app or whatever, one of those job search applications, and just look at, okay, how many new job postings were there in my area today? And just watch that trend. And you start seeing, like, wow, there's not that many opportunities. They're not hiring multiple people for one position. They're only hiring one person, two people, right? And these are important things, right? What we get fed to us through news and government agencies could be altered, right? I don't believe everything that they shove down our throat. So look at those things. What do we got here? So just going through other reasons why I don't think that a market crash is going to be happening anytime soon. Let's take a look at these charts. So clearly M3 for the United States. The money supply continues to increase. They don't seem to care. They will print more. So they're going to support the economy. Unemployment rate has dropped down. Again, it may not even be true. It's down to 6.3. You look at where it was, 6.3. The last time it was around 6.3 was March of 2014. If it keeps trending downwards, and it will with the reopening, I think that's good. Personal savings, this one I like. How much money are saved in the bank accounts? You've never seen it like this, right? We've seen a reopening, and our savings accounts in the United States are huge. People got a lot of money in the bank, right? So this is something that to keep an eye on. If this starts leveling it out, then we may not have that pent up demand and a lot of spend come the reopening. So this summer, I think maybe the rest of this year may be really well, right, positioned, because there's going to be a lot of money that people are eagerly to spend. So the savings rate, I like it. Delinquency, I really like this one too. If you look at the 2008 crash, this is a lot of it has to do with mortgages. So this is all loans, but I think it was due to the foreclosures and all that crap that was happening with these, the mortgage payments were creeping up on people. If you look at it, the delinquency was happening far before the crash. The crash happened in Q4 of 2008 here. But if you look at the delinquency rate, it was creeping up. It bottomed in 2006. So if you were to look at this chart and say, hey, something's wrong here. If people are being delinquent, the delinquency rate on all loans is continuing to increasing, what do you expect? And then boom, you know, we've seen the crash in 2008. Where are we at right now? Very low. People are paying their stuff, right? Credit card loans. Nobody's delinquent. Savings rate all time high. People are paying their stuff because they're not even using their credit card that much, right? So that's another great indicator that we've never seen. I mean, we have in the past, but like over here, but we've had record low delinquency rate on credit cards. And then the single family residential mortgages, are they delinquent? I think they've leveled off, in my opinion. Obviously higher than what they have been in the past, but things have obviously changed. You had a higher delinquency rate in 2015, 16, 17, 18 than you do now, right? So this to me is not indicating anything that would state a crash, right? But that obviously can change. If all those incentive programs, wage subsidies, business loans, all these eviction rules and help to mom and pop landlords, all this stuff, if that stops, it's a different ball game. But right now, I don't see that happening. And for that reason, I think we're in a good position. So with that said, we'll take a look at the crashes of 2000, and then we'll take a look at the crash of 08-09, and I'm just going to pull up my stuff, and then we'll compare it to 2020 and so on. So I'm just going to pull up the Dow Jones. Let me see if you got that. So we've got the Dow here in 2000. So what I did was I used the retracement tool in Webull. It's called Fibonacci retracement, and it's right here if you ever get the chart pulled up. So what I look at is how bad did it retrace. So when I look at the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500. So the Dow, it retraced pretty much, let me see here. It retraced, I would say, more 80%. So if prior to the, so what I did is I went prior to the run up in the dot-com bubble, the lowest point was just before 99. And I looked at how bad it was. How bad did it retrace when it crashed? It went, the Dow went from 11,750 all the way down to 7,203 in 2003. So imagine this. It from the dot-com crash in 2000, it didn't actually bottom until August of 2002. So we may have bear, like a whole bear run, right? You may not have a single day crash or a single week crash like we've seen in March. You may actually see where we just trend in the wrong way for quite some time. So that was with the Dow, and it happened with the NASDAQ, and it happened with the S&P 500. And so it can be really bad. With the NASDAQ, most of the NASDAQ was tech. So with the tech sector, it took a harder hit, right? Because it retraced 100%. Like 100%. Like there was, it was insane. Like you went from 5,000 5,000. Yeah. The NASDAQ was, at a high point, 5,132. I don't know why. And the lowest was just before 2003, 1,000 points. Right. That's crazy. Right. So it took 2 years to bottom again. And then you'll see again, it bottomed just as bad in 2008. So yeah, when it does crash, it can get pretty ugly. Like you could lose, you're pretty much, if you look at this and with this chart here, what you had invested, if you had invested in the NASDAQ, ninety-six, and you left it there, it would have ran up and it would have came all the way back down to same level 96 in 2002, almost 2003, right? That's what, for 7 years almost, right? So it's crazy. It retraced fully over a 7 year timeline. So and then you would never think it would retrace back to the same level 6 years later, and it did in 2008 crash. You look at the S&P 500, it pretty much retraced more than 60%, about, I'd say, 70% from its high in during the dot-com crash. So it's pretty tough, right? Like you could lose quite a bit when these markets correct. When we look at 2009 crash, and I'm only showing you these things just to show you that, you know, I have a lot of friends that say, oh, you just got to find the support lines. You just got to find the support lines. Well, if you look here, the Dow, and I'm not picking on any of these. These are like indicators that everybody, you know, pays attention to. The Dow, the NASDAQ, and S&P 500. And this is the 2008-9 crash. Well, take a look at this. I started to retrace it from the 2000, the low point of the 2003. So 2003 was a turning turnaround, and then we seen a bull stretch. If you look at, if you invested in 2003, you would have went all the way back to your original investment, if not even lower than that, is possible with the dot-com crash. With the 2008 crash. So from 2003, you peaked in 2008, and then boom, all the gains were lost. All that support talk was all gone. Like, it broke all that. So I say this, I give these examples because when it does crash, there is no support. Like, it was a liquidity. It was just a liquidity issue. Like, it was just everyone wanted to get out. There was no buyers, it seemed like, because we look at the NASDAQ, same thing. Lowest point was 2000, just before 2003, and at 1108, in terms of like the NASDAQ was at 1108 points, and then it peaked at 2861 point in 2008, and then it went all the way down. And it retraced to about, I say, 90%. We look at the S&P 500. It broke that support as well. Right? It touched down. I don't know if you can see it. It touched down. Look at this. Is 2008, 2009. And look here. The low point in 2003 from the dot-com crash. From the dot-com crash. This was the turnaround point. This was the lowest point in the S&P 500. We broke that in 2008, 2009. So why am I sharing this? I'm sharing it because I think anything is possible. There is no safe way to protect yourself when the crash does come, it's gonna come. When it does come, it comes hard. And I say this to say, if you look at the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P, when it crashed in COVID last year, it didn't retrace. It retraced, but didn't retrace that much. Because I think there were certain people, especially these big hedge funds, that said, hey, we can't unload everything. We're just going to leave it alone, right? There was fear, but it wasn't as much as we've seen in the past. So, did we really have the crash in 2020? Probably not, based on the historical charts that I just shown you, the last two. So, If history repeats itself, this will be disastrous, because in the last two crashes, to the dot-com and in the 2008, I showed you how the retracement was pretty much almost 100% back to its original bottom. If that happens again, we would see something we've never seen before, because the bottom, or the retracement that I'm giving you here, is the real bottom would be, based on what has happened the last two times, would be the 2008-2009 crash. And it's a steep slope, right? And if this happens, it would be in my opinion very scary. It'd be very scary, and it'd be something that would be something we've never seen. Because if you look at the previous two that I showed you, we didn't run up that much. There's more money this time around. There's more margin debt this time around. More people have more money to invest this time around. Everything has been amplified by the Fed. Stock prices are at levels that we've never seen. If you look at Tesla's trading at $4,000 a share. Well, maybe not now. Now, what are they at? 6,000. They're about 3,000. But a month ago, at the pre-split level, it was 4,000. You could have got this for $900 last summer. During the crash, you could have got it for, I think, $300-$400 last year. It's now at 4,000. Their earnings, price to earnings, are insane. If you look at the PE ratios of a lot of these stocks, there's so many that are above 1,000. It's crazy to me. So when this time around, when we go down, I think we go down big. And that's the reason why I showed you these charts, is that I haven't seen the same retracement in the 2020 crash. I think we could see more. What else? I'll show you just quickly. And even with the shoot. Even if you look at the, I think it's showing the whole chart. Even if you look at the S&P 500, and you look at using that same tool, let me delete these. All right, so the same tool, the retracement tool, the last time we really hit a bottom before the April was here and here, in November. So we're not, I don't see us touching those, but this is what I'm looking at. When was this? This was January? Yeah, this was January. So yeah, so if the S&P is to break, if the S&P 500 is to break, hold on, what's the S&P right now? I believe the S&P okay, yeah, so it is okay, so it is 3819. Okay, so if it breaks this support here, 3680, then we could have a serious problem, because the next bottom that I see could really be anything. So today is what, March 4th, and my fear is this here. If we break this support here of 3680, we could see a further retracement. But again, that's more of a technical approach. I still don't believe the Fed allows us to fail. I still don't believe any central bank in the world. I think they're all together. But when the crash does happen, I think it's going to be very bad. And I say that because we haven't had a serious retracement. And if we follow history, the .com, and we follow the 2008, and go take a look at the lowest points, so before the bull run in the .com and before the bull run in 2008. So I'll just give you a recap of what I'm talking about. The down 2009. When you look at the 2000, so prior to 99, this is where the Dow was over here. If you see my mouse, that was the lowest point before it ran up, and it reached. And if you look here, 2002, it retraced all the way down. So whatever you gained, you lost it all. And we've seen the same thing in 2009. The lowest point was 2003, like we said in the previous slide of the Dow. You ran it all the way up to 2008, and then it came all the way back and retraced even more than 100%, lower than what you would have got in 2003. And that's what we're waiting for. I think a lot of people is we haven't seen the same retracement. What we've seen in March last year was nothing. That was just a COVID. That was just a COVID situation. That wasn't a proper retracement of the Dow. So, yeah. So it's gonna be interesting. Let me see if I can show the Nasdaq. Yeah. So we haven't seen a retracement. If you look at this, the last time I went from 2008 here all the way up, but it's all, who knows? We really don't know in the future. Is it going to repeat itself like it did the last two times? If it does, it's going to be disaster, right? Because you're going to lose everything, right? Does the Fed allow that? I don't think so. But at the same time, you know, it's up to us. The market is at the price point that it's at. It's because I see value in a stock. Tesla could be worth $2 a share. It could be $20,000 a share. But that's up to me and you. What are you willing to pay for a share of a company? That's what the market price is. But if tomorrow we're all scared and we take our money out, then even if the market is healthy, even if and that's where I think a lot of volatility is coming from. We're going to determine when that crash happens. When we feel, you know, enough is enough. We don't want to put more money into the market, or if we're scared to put money in the market, whatever we decide on as investors, retail or non-retail, because even those hedge funds that say, hey, retail doesn't control the markets, well, hedge funds are investing for whom? They're investing for clients. So those clients are technically like retail. And if those people are scared and say, hey, I want my money out, I mean, obviously there's some money that's locked in, but we've seen it in the past, right? If that holds, why didn't they prevent the last two crashes? So I think it's us. I think we get to determine when this crash happens. And so when people say, is there a correction coming? Is there a stock market crash coming? Really, you have to ask yourself, you as an investor, and what do you think other people are thinking? Most of the times they're thinking like you. When we all panicked and we took our money out of the market in March, we all behaved the same, right? And that stretch, if you look at it, it didn't happen overnight. If you look at this, February, this is what, February 19th, went down, then went back up. Went down, back up, down, back up. You didn't even know you were sliding down, right? Because it was just moving sideways. So, scary, right? This took from February 19th all the way to March 23rd, over a month of declines for people to realize, you know, there's something not right. So, probably some of us realize it sooner than others, but I mean, for people to say, I know when a crash is coming, or I know how to, you know, I know. It's here. We might be one in right now, right? Because if you look at this is the S&P 500. If you look at we're moving sideways, right? We're moving sideways and we're not really going up. We're just moving sideways. We might even be treading down if these interest rates continue to rise and harm the market. At what point do you decide to pull out? It's going to be tough. And so there are some big hedge funds such as Bill Ackman that are betting against the market right now, that are saying that interest rates are going to increase and it's going to destroy the market. So, you know, pay attention to news, pay attention to the big time investors and people like Warren Buffett that don't have all their money in, decided to rather buy back their stock than to put that money into stocks. So that's an indication in itself. But anyhow, that's pretty much it. Hopefully you found some value in this video and that it made sense. And if you have questions, you can email trade@stockbullies.com or, you know, message in the Discord. I'll be more than happy to explain anything that you didn't understand. Like always, if you like the video, share it with others. If you see value in it, why not? And yeah. I'll just leave it at that. Until next time, take care.